Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 30th of January, Anno Domini 2016, and you, oh, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And 5 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose. Kick off your shoes, don't get the blues. Here comes the news. Oracle will retire the Java browser plugin, frequently the target of web-based exploits about a year from now. Remnants, however, will likely linger longer after that. Oracle plans to deprecate the Java browser plugin in JDK 9, the Java platform group said in a blog post Wednesday. This technology will be removed from the Oracle JDK and JRE in a future Java SE release. A lot of acronyms in there. The Java Development Kit 9, the reference implementation for the next version of Java SE, is expected to reach general availability in March 2017. By then, however, most modern browsers will no longer accept the Java plugin anyway. Mozilla announced in October that it plans to remove support for the plugins in Firefox by the end of 2016. Chrome disabled support last September for plugins that, like Java and Silverlight, use the old Netscape plugin applications programming interface standard. Microsoft's Edge browser doesn't support them either. With Internet Explorer and Safari, the only browsers set to still accept traditional Netscape API plugins after 2016, Oracle's pretty much forced into this decision. Oracle does not plan to provide additional browser-specific plugins, such as plugins would recover, as such plugins would require application developers to write browser-specific applets for each browser they wish to support, the company said in a white paper. Moreover, without a cross-browser API, Oracle would only be able to offer a subset of the required functionality, different from one browser to the next, impacting both application developers and users, misusing the word impact. The main alternative proposed by the company is to switch from Java applets to Java web start applications. This type of application can be launched from the web without the need for a browser plugin. From a security perspective, though, Java web start applications can be used as an attack vector for exploiting vulnerabilities in the Java runtime, just like applets. Even after the plugin is retired, it's likely that many companies will continue to have it installed for years to come. This is especially true in business environments where custom-built web-based Java applications are common and cannot be easily replaced or rewritten. Even now, for application compatibility reasons, there's a large number of computers in business environments that continue to use Java 6 or Java 7, versions that no longer receive public security updates. So our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that is bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you. Oracle is killing the Java browser plugin. Your choices are, hallelujah, it's a start, people still use that, and is that good? So far, we have about 25 people who have gone into the poll and who have answered the poll, and the top choice right now is that good, followed by hallelujah. Of course, I know you'll have more to say, so slide down on the right-hand side, scroll down until you see fascinating stuff. The first choice is the forums. Once you get to the forums, the second forum down is the poll discussion. And right now, at least, the first choice is 30Jan16. Oracle is killing the Java browser. So far, two posts, me and Christian. Please join us there. And, of course, if you have anything you'd like to say about the Java plugin, you can do so by giving us a call, 585. Or about anything else, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. We've had our differences, Java and I, over the years. One of the big things is that Java theoretically was a write once, run anywhere language. The problem is security sucks in Java. It's very hard to make a truly secure product. It's not impossible, it's just very difficult. And consequently, most people don't do it well. Most programmers don't do it well or at all. And so Java has always been the number one attack vector for the bad guys getting into your computer.
Java and Flash.
Java and Flash. Flash was worse. Okay, Flash was worse. But Java is now the number one since nobody uses Flash anymore.
Yeah, more people had Flash installed, so that was an easier vector.
Right, right, right. But Flash is gone, so it's Java. And now Java will be gone. And I feel bad for those people who have, become Java programmers, put their careers on Java. It's a very useful language. It's a very interesting language. But I believe this is at least the beginning of the death knell since Oracle is no longer going to support the plugin. I suspect that the use of Java in general is not that far behind.
We had a customer a couple of weeks ago had a problem that their website was supposed to play music, and it wasn't. And it turned out to be the same issue, the NNMPI, the Netscape application programming interface.
Right.
That was created in 1995 by Netscape.
Yep.
So that's what they're discontinuing, a 1995 technology.
Yeah, and that's the problem.
Yeah, and too many people are still using it.
You know, back in 95, we all had, it was a wide open internet. Nobody really thought about security. It was not a big deal. It's certainly a good technology. The language itself is good. I'm not upset about any of that. It was just poorly managed, poorly maintained. And that's all on Oracle. They're the folks who own it. All right, to the phones. Our first caller is Mike from Greece, New York. Hiya, Mike. What's up? Mike, you there? Mike?
Mike? Sorry, I was on mute.
Okay, what's up?
I'm going to reinstall 7 on my quad-core 7 machine, and I've got two questions. What are the pitfalls that I should be aware of from your point of view? And the second one is, do you have a preferred vehicle to back up all the data files so I don't lose stuff because I don't know where they are?
That's okay. So first,
that's a tricky one.
Yeah. In terms of reinstalling 7, well, that's lovely. Unless you do a bunch of weird stuff in the registry, you will find that eventually Microsoft will find you again and start insisting on installing 10, and that at some point they will indeed install 10. Whether you like it or not, that's the latest thing we're hearing. But while you still have 7, you can certainly reinstall it and play that game as often as they like. In terms of backing up, theoretically, very nice, very terrible.
It bounces.
We'd like to apologize to everyone who's on the YouTube channel right now. Steve just dropped the camera. But in terms of backing everything up, if you didn't muck about with stuff, it should all be under documents. If you did, you're kind of on your own as to where they all are. There's no magic way to find them.
You'd have to do a search, star.doc.
You know, if you're using Intuit or one of those programs, they may save them in their own directories.
Mm-hmm. Some programs put the documents in the application folder for some stupid reason.
Yep.
So depends on your applications. Like I say, Nick was saying, if you're doing, say, Quicken or any of those other programs, they store it in a separate registry. But you can, within that particular program, tell it to back it up to another device. Say if I'm using Quicken, and normally it backs up to a folder somewhere else on your hard drive. For a one-time shot deal, you can hook up an external hard drive and tell it for that one time, back it up to this external hard drive.
You're right. It's one of the things that I've hated about Quicken forever is it never tells you where the file is, and you can never find the file when you want it again. So we often run into customers who are upgrading their machines, and we can't find their Quicken file. And we've also had people that have backed up the Quicken shortcut of the application.
Faithfully,
for years on dozens of CDs without realizing that's not the document that it created.
Right. So in terms of backing up, the place I think everybody should back up, it depends. If you can afford it, buy an external drive, either connected directly to the network, which means it's always available and you can back up at any time and set up a backup, an automatic backup thing that happens, or something that you plug into your computer, which means you'll have to plug it in and then actually manually do the backup. Or, of course, you can run a program like Carbonite and back up to the web, to the to the internet, and do it that way. Which you prefer is up to you. All of them cost a certain amount of money. If you don't have a lot of documents and stuff, then you can back it up to thumb drives. But again, how you back up is far less important than the fact that you back up. Doing regular backups is super important. That's why I tell people, if you can buy an external drive to sit on your network or use something like Carbonite, that means that you don't have to think about backing up anymore. And if you don't have to think about it, then it's more likely to happen correctly regularly.
Yeah, we hear that a lot, too. Yeah, I have a backup. It's about 6 months old.
Yeah.
Well, you're going to lose everything you had in you've done in the last 6 months.
Yeah.
What about all the photos of the new baby? Well, sorry.
Again, that's where, you know, iCloud or iPhoto, I use that from Google. It's
Google,
a free
Google
app.
Google Photos.
Yeah.
Yep, backs up all your photos to the cloud.
And that is unbelievable. You know, as long as it's 16 megapixels or less, you can store unlimited number of photos up there free of charge.
Yep.
And the same with the Google Drive. You can put documents and everything else up there.
Yep. And that's another way to do it. You can back everything up to Google Drive. If you store things, if you tell it to convert them as it uploads them, it doesn't count against your storage. So even though you only get 15 gigs, for example, I've got 20,000 documents stored in Google Drive, and I've used 2 gig.
Wow.
Yeah, because I transfer them. As I upload word processing documents and spreadsheets and presentations, I've told Google the one time I needed to. I said, translate these, transfer them to the Google format so that they don't count against my storage. But at any rate, the point here is you're going to have to do some detective work. You're going to have to figure out where your stuff is. Start by looking in the documents folder, or my documents, I guess, depending on which version of Windows you have. Then if you've got Quicken, then it's a tougher thing, but take a look around and see where it might be stored. It'll be a single big file, that's for sure.
Well, I like the idea that I back that up on the external hard drive, and then once I reload Quicken and TurboTax, I just restore the backups.
Yeah, that would work. That would absolutely work.
Great. And as far as a backup program that any of you have found to be the best of the best, give me a name.
Well, I really like what I just said it a minute ago.
Well, there's two ways: a local backup to Cobian.
Cobian, Cobian.
Or network backup, like a network hard drive, either local hard drive or network hard drive. And then the internet backup services like Carbonite or
Carbonite.
CrashPlan has a really interesting option where if you trust your friend, you can back up to your friend's computer for free. And then you don't have to pay CrashPlan for storage.
Okay. Or if you've got two computers.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cobian is an excellent choice. Cobian, Cobian Backup. It's a free product, and it will... it takes a little time to set it up.
Yep.
But once you've set it up and you've got your external drive, it'll do all the backup for you without you having to think about it, as long as your machine is on. So one of the things you have to think about is, when is your machine on?
Yep.
You know, so if it's on 24/7, back up at 2 a.m.
Yep.
Okie doke.
Very good. Once I get Windows 7 reinstalled, I plan on maybe cloning so that I won't have to go through this again. But at this point in time, I really need to reinstall Windows 7 so my machine will boot up in less than 7 minutes.
Yeah.
Right. All right,
thank
good luck.
You.
Yep. Yeah, we have any number of people who are trying to figure out ways to not have to go to Windows 10. And, of course, Microsoft has a whole series of people who are absolutely interested in making you go to Windows 10. So there's an interesting fight going on there, and we'll see what happens. In the meantime, however, we're going to take a little break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 20 minutes after the hour. We are Soundbites and the truly great and solely member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Soundbites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Mike loaded all new music for us.
Nice. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we have Andy from Greece, New York on the line. Hi, Andy. What's up?
Hi, guys. Two things today, a follow-up and a new question. On the follow-up, I talked to you a couple weeks ago. I have a solid-state drive that Windows was just chewing up more and more space on, and it's a 125-gig drive, and I was down to less than 25% of the drive available. And we talked about various ways to clean it up. And after I talked with you, I did a search just to see what was going on. And I came across an article on CNET. And it's interestingly enough called Delete Windows Files to Regain Hard Drive Space. Go figure. Very clean, easy to understand article. Uses something that Windows 7 builds into itself called Clean Manager, CLEANMGR. And you follow the instructions, and I went from less than 25% available to more than 75% available.
Nice. And this is under Windows 7 or 10?
7.
7.
Is that part of the disk cleanup utility that's been built in for a while?
You hit the start button and type CLEANMGR and check off the boxes and tell it to run, and next thing you know, you got a clean hard drive.
Yeah, that's the disk cleanup tool.
Yeah, right-click on your hard drive and go to Tools. And,
you get to the same
and there's
place.
A cleanup command.
Yeah. But the article on CNET, a young lady wrote it, and it's very easy to follow, easy to understand.
Excellent.
Cool.
So it works really, really well. But like I said, it was delete Windows files to regain hard drive space. So it was really easy to find.
Yeah.
Now we get to the question part. Google, or Chromebook, rather, with Google Operating System.
Yeah.
I've been reading on how to print from it, and it says you got to go to the internet, set your printer up as an internet printer, and all this other stuff.
Yep.
Basic question: my internal network has two printers on it that are have fixed hard drive or fixed IP addresses, rather. Excuse me.
Yeah.
Can I set it up to go to them, staying inside my network, or do I still have to go through the web?
Well, yeah, it's going to find them, whether it finds them through the web or it finds them. On your internal network is completely irrelevant.
Okay.
Right? I mean, it doesn't matter.
Oh, okay.
It's still going to find them.
If you want to print to your home printer when you're not at home, it has to push it through
that.
The internet.
The Chromebook normally doesn't go out of the house. I think the only time it's really gone out of the house is when I went on a vacation.
Yep.
And was using it to just cruise the web and check email. While I was on vacation. Other than that, it stays in the house all the time.
Right. Well, and I do very much the same thing. I mean, I'm printing right now. I don't know that it's going to print before I get home. But
it scares your wife who's sitting next to the printer.
No, she's at market. We have the coffee stand at the public market. So
I like doing that at work. I'll be in the back room and I'll send a receipt to the front receipt printer.
Right.
And startle someone who's standing
there. Sit there daydreaming or that.
Yeah.
As opposed to working union.
Yeah.
But no, it shouldn't honestly matter, particularly if your printer has static IP addresses that are actually on the real internet. You should be able to print from anywhere. And I've never not printed, but I honestly, because the printer is upstairs, if I come home and I find that it's printed, I don't know when it actually happened. Right?
Okay, well, these static IPs are on, they're my network IPs. They're not internet eyepiece.
All right. If that's the case, then it may not print until you come home and open your laptop.
Okay, but if I'm in the house and I'm looking, I'm upstairs looking at something on the net, and I say, "Oh, I want to print this."
Yep.
I can set it up, click the print button, walk downstairs, and get my stuff off the printer.
That's exactly how it works.
Cool.
That is exactly how it works, and in fact, in terms of that, if it doesn't happen until you come home, you don't care because that's when you pick up the paper anyway.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's just a matter of what happens is you need to set up the printer to use Google Cloud Print, and most modern printers can do that. By the way, it's part of their setup, and in fact, I had a printer that didn't do it, and so I had to set it up. It was on a laptop, an old laptop that was acting as my print server, so I had to set it up on there. But once I bought the new printer, one of the choices was Google Cloud Print. Okay.
And Apple calls it AirPrint, and HP calls it ePrint.
Right. Everybody's got a name for it. It's the same thing.
Yep.
So you just if it's a cloud-ready computer, you just tell it go, and are you there?
Yeah.
Okay. You just tell it go, and then you say in the Chromebook, go find that printer, and it'll come up and say, oh, I found a printer on the network. It's your brother, whatever it is, your HP, whatever
That's
it
what
is.
That's what I've still got to do with mine.
Yep.
Still set that part up.
Yeah, Dave bought himself a Chromebook, and he can't talk about anything else now.
Yeah, well, I've got a Samsung LaserJet, and that I use for day to day black and whites.
Yep.
And then I've got an HP All in One that I'll use for colors and things like that.
Yep. And you can do the same thing. You can set up multiple printers, and you can connect them all, and then pick the one you want, just like you would with any other printer. You can also print directly to PDFs if that makes you happy, and you can just pretty much do any of that stuff.
Okay, so that's in the Google Print setup.
Right. And it's just Google Cloud Print.
Google Cloud.
And it should be, for those of you who are contemplating Chromebooks and looking to buy a new printer, just make sure you buy a printer that's Google Cloud Print ready.
Well, that'll be the next search. Okay.
And most printers are these days, especially wireless printers. And most printers are wireless these days, too.
Right.
So many people have mobile devices.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
All right.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Have fun.
Bye-bye.
HP had a commercial a few years ago with talking about their cloud printing. A couple at the Grand Canyon taking a picture of their baby in front of the Grand Canyon. And then the commercial was the baby and its walker shooting down traffic, through buildings and coming out the printer at the end. And apparently HP got millions of angry parents saying, "How dare you put a baby in traffic?" Like, they would have.
Yeah, people do not understand.
Special effect. Yeah, you'll believe the spaceship landing in the movie, but you think they really put a baby in traffic.
Yeah, but
right.
Another.
But it's a really cool commercial. They hit print and then at the printer at home, so your family at home can follow your trip.
Yep.
By the prints coming.
Bruce talking about. Oh, go ahead.
Go ahead.
I was going to say about commercials though that are annoying.
Yeah.
And disturbing.
All of them.
No, disturbing as a parent. There's one particular one, without mentioning names, you'll know what I'm talking about. This couple leaves the house, and this other gentleman's watching these two boys.
Oh, yeah.
And all of a sudden, they start running all over the place.
Yeah.
If I did that as a kid, my bottom side would be sore from my parents sitting there saying, what the heck are you doing?
Or the babysitter would have done it.
Yes.
That's exactly right.
To allow kids to do that.
Yeah.
And if you came home, and if your parents came home and you said, the babysitter spanked me, you'd get it again. They don't even wait to find out why.
Oh, heck,
that was not the point. Exactly.
Yeah,
right.
But to see kids that, that's acceptable, for kids to act that way?
Yeah.
Until they got them the...
I'm old school. I'll admit
Windows tablet, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Whatever it's a commercial for, until they got this thing, then the kids
Right. Bruce Campbell once famously said, the people who believe the movies, you can't fix them. You can only torment them.
Yeah.
The people believe that movies are real.
Yeah.
All right. Back to the phones. Our next caller is Tim from Webster, New York. Hiya, Tim. What's up?
Yeah. Hi, guys. I was doing a lot of research. All the concerns that people have about Windows 10 and their privacy issues. And I decided to, instead of listen to the rumors, I dug into their terms and conditions and stuff and really spent some time on it.
Oh, you're the guy.
So, because people are making claims about what they could or would do on, and under what conditions. So, of course, if there's a legal issue, of course the law can come in and warrants can come into play and all this stuff. But if there's a situation where you have a crash, they will retrieve information too. And suppose you're working on something where you have some proprietary business information, like in a document or something, they might, in their terms, it says that they would have access to that to try to determine how better to prevent the crash and fix the issue. Does that sound correct?
Yes, absolutely.
So my concern is, of course, I want to learn a different operating system, and I was getting gung-ho on this and trying to explore some of the stuff that you guys talk about, but then I realized, oh, wait a minute, I use video editing software that I depend on all the time, and it's my understanding that it is going to need the Windows 10 operating system in order for me to continue to get their yearly updates to use their editing software. Is that the case, or can I move over to a different operating system?
You may have to move to different software.
It depends on what the software is. What is the software?
This would be CyberLink PowerDirector. And, I mean, that would just be such a huge, well, as you guys know, endeavor.
You're learning a new OS? Let's learn a new video editing tool.
Exactly, exactly.
Yeah, I don't know that CyberLink will run on anything other than Windows. So if you're going to run it, you're going to run it on Windows 10.
Oh, goodness.
But there certainly are many other video editing suites on other operating systems.
But you would have to learn them.
Yeah.
Do you know any that might have a similar format?
I'm afraid I don't know much about this particular product. It's just not my area of expertise. I'm sorry.
Okay.
But, you know, one of the things you can do is look around in terms of...
Alternative 2?
Yeah, there's a place called alternative2.net.com.
I know Adobe Premiere and Apple's Final Cut are popular. At the very high end, you've got the Avid Symphony series.
Excellent. Okay.
Yeah.
CyberLink PowerDirector.
It's GIMP. GIMP is still. What's the free one for video?
Hold on. Let's see what we got. Oh, here we go. There's a website called alternative2.net.
Okay, .net.
That's T-O, alternative to, like, it's the alternative to something else.
Great.
And if you type in CyberLink PowerDirector, you get Avidimux, Virtual Dub, OpenShot, Sony Vegas, Adobe Premiere Pro, of course, Kden Live, Lightworks, iMovie, pretty much every operating system and every program, some of which are open source, some of which are commercial, some of which are freemium. You get a certain amount for free, and then if you want advanced features, you pay.
That are hopefully going to be usable on something besides Windows 10.
Well, yes, exactly. For example, iMovie works on the Mac. Kden Live, Avidimux, Lightworks, PityV, Shotcut, all work on Cinelera, all work on Linux.
Linux, exactly.
So there's lots and lots of them, and one of the beautiful things is so many of them are free. As long as you've got some time, just set up a Linux box, check them out now. You know, if you're running Linux on a different computer, it's going to be slower, etc. Yada yada yada. You know all that.
Okay.
But it doesn't. But all the features work.
Okay.
Right. So you can fairly easily figure out what it is they do and what it is you need. And of course, if you do, since you've been doing your research, you can go to the websites and see what their features are.
Yeah.
Excellent.
And it's likely that every Windows program will eventually require Windows 10. And so your choice is to learn the new version or don't upgrade.
Right.
And keep it with your old system.
Okay, awesome. At least I got something to go on here. To go backwards real quick to a previous caller, I was very interested in that Clean MGR, and I did go to my, over to the computer.
And then, yeah.
And then, and then I right-clicked on it, but I didn't see what Steve was mentioning.
In properties, not on the computer, on the hard drive.
So if you right-click on the hard drive and select properties...
There should
properties.
Be a,
got it.
There should
okay.
be a tools option.
Awesome. I got it. All set. Thanks for your time, guys.
There you go.
Yep.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Have fun. Before we move on, however, what I should say is that it's not so much, particularly on Windows 10, it's not so much the Windows End User License Agreement, EULA, EULA, that's the problem. It's the Cortana EULA. Cortana, and everybody's acting like this is new. Siri does it. Google Now does it. Mm-hmm. Every assistant that's been around for the past 10 years does it. What happens is Cortana collects, Cortana and Siri and Google Now collect information about you from everywhere, from your calendar, from your tweets, from everything, and in order to help you do stuff. But all of that stuff is stored in the cloud at Microsoft or Apple or Google.
Right.
And so the question becomes, who do you trust? They've got all this information about you, and so they're just correlating it to put it together. But that's where that comes from.
And the legalese they probably use in the terms and conditions is you agree to let us send your information to the internet.
Right, right.
Because it has to do that to get the question back.
Right. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Sound Bites on Member Supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on Member Supported Jazz 90.1.
Nice stuff.
Yeah, it is.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 43 minutes after the hour, we don't have anybody on the line at the moment, so call back.
So that music was Eminence Front from the Who, and it's being used in a truck commercial. And I hate when they use really good known music in commercials, because now I can't get that stupid truck commercial out of my head.
Yep.
It's as bad as CSI using the Who for all of their theme songs. And
except it really sounds like Who's Wally.
Yeah.
Okay, back to the phones. This time it's Paul from Brighton, New York. Welcome, Paul. What's up?
Computer. The other day, the screen went black, and I got this message saying that, you know, the standard message saying that the video cable wasn't attached. And I've got a GeForce 450 graphics card in there, and I thought that might be the problem. I did go through some diagnostics, which, you know, listening to the beeps, and those indicated that there wasn't any gross problem with the memory or things like that. So I took that card, when I was suspect, I took it to another computer that I knew was working. I put it in instead of the other graphics card that was in that one. Still had the same problem, wouldn't work. So then I took the graphics card that was good in that other computer, put it into the computer that went bad, and I still didn't get a display. I'm not even getting any BIOS messages, anything like that.
Have you tried a different display? Maybe it's not the video card.
Yeah, I'm confident that the display is okay. So the likelihood that there would be two things in that computer that went bad, that both the graphics card and something else in the computer would go bad, that seemed a little unlikely.
Yeah, or it's the slots that are bad.
Yeah.
One thing I might suggest is, did you put the known good card back in the other computer?
Yes, and it works.
And it works, okay.
Yeah.
What I was worried about was that it was the slot that went bad and it killed the card.
I was wondering about that too, but no, it's okay.
Or it could be the other way around. The card died and killed the slot.
Okay, yeah. Well, that's... I hear what you're saying.
Yeah, you can certainly check the slot to see if there's any...
There's two slots in that machine that went bad. So I took the suspect card, and put it in the other slot. It still didn't work.
Yeah, okay, here's what I think you're going to have to do. If a known good card doesn't work in either slot...
Right.
Then what may have gone bad is the controller chip that controls those two slots. It honestly has nothing to do with video as such. What it has to do with with is controlling the signals that go to and from that particular slot, whatever you plug in there.
Right.
So if that chip went...
Maybe the motherboard is what you're saying.
That's exactly what I'm saying, is if that particular chip went bad, all the other cards would continue to work.
Mm-hmm.
The motherboard would continue to work, but those two slots would not. And it sounds like those are AGP slots because you put an AGP card in them.
Yeah, what are they called?
PCIe, right.
Mm-hmm, right.
So it's very possible that the PCIe controller went bad.
Okay. Does it have onboard video?
No. It doesn't have onboard. I only have the graphics card. This motherboard did not come with integrated.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. What I might suggest is, if you have a lower end video card that'll just plug into a regular slot, try that.
That
will at least tell you if that works. Then you know that it's what we say it is.
Right.
As opposed to, well, because the card doesn't work in another machine, it's certainly not a driver or anything like that. So I can't imagine what else it would actually be.
Yeah. So it may be time for a new motherboard.
It's a good excuse.
Yeah. Okay. A little less donation next time to Jazz, sorry.
Oh, because it's our fault. That's right.
No. All you got to do is go to like a Chromebook.
That's an option.
That is an option.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And then you can put all that extra money into your donation.
There you go. Because advice we gave you, you save that much more money.
That's right. Okay.
And they are quick and they are fast.
All right. I'll do what I can. Thanks for listening.
All right.
No, thank you very much, Paul. Good luck.
Bye.
We're big fans of the Chromebook here. I use mine almost all the time. Ooh. As I've said many times, I sit, if I'm upstairs, I'm sitting at my desktop, my Linux desktop, because it's got this huge monitor, which is good for my old eyes. But everywhere else, I'm using a Chromebook. I know I should bring a real Windows 10 computer here, and I have to do it. But I've been using, when I leave the house, I grab the Chromebook. That's
you know what? I have not even seen Windows 10 yet.
Yeah, you haven't missed much of anything.
No, I'm going to put it on this other machine in my office. I am going to upgrade that just to play around with it and that. But the thing that I've been focused on, and like I said, I've been telling folks that I was going to do, and here the past few weeks, was slowly cut the cord for myself as far as my desktop, leaving that, with Windows 7 on it.
Yep.
Limping along, doing its thing. But I'm disconnecting that from the internet and going to my Chromebook now. I wound up getting an Acer 15-inch screen. The thing is fast. It's got 4 gig of memory, 100 gig hard drive, and it's unbelievable. You open it up, boom, there's the operating system.
Yeah.
And it is so nice just setting it all up and getting things to
work.
You
know what? If you connect it to your phone through Bluetooth and your phone is unlocked, the Chromebook is automatically unlocked. And all you have to do is click on your picture and it'll boot to the desktop.
Oh.
You don't even have to type in your password.
Oh, okay.
Let's go back to the phones. Yeah. We've only got a couple of minutes and we're going to talk to Brian, who's on the road.
How you doing, guys?
Your hand's free, right, Brian?
I'm pulled over right now.
There you go.
That's good. Hey, wanted to touch base. Well, first of all, I'm really a tough sell when it comes to changing my equipment around, but my Chromebook is just magic.
There you go.
I really tried to resist it, but it is an amazing product.
It is. It's the kind of thing where you think, okay, this is not really going to be particularly useful. Because we're so used to having high-end specs.
How useful could a $200 computer be?
Right. And it's not a particularly powerful machine. It doesn't have a lot of disk space, doesn't have a lot of oomph anywhere. But what the hell, we'll give it a try. And then, boom, it's magic.
It is. And with remote access, you can access any of your equipment anywhere over the net at any time, even over your phone.
Right.
Yeah. And you can run any powerful machine right from your Chromebook. So it will do anything for you.
That's exactly right.
Actually, a couple tips and tricks here about QuickBooks. You guys were talking earlier in the show. I've been with QuickBooks since it was in beta. In fact, I used to I was one of the earliest adopters in Rochester.
Nice.
I didn't even know by accident. I didn't know I was doing it, but I actually my first version of Quicken and QuickBooks was in DOS.
Wow.
Yeah, I'm not kidding you. And I just by accident, and Intuit was just a tiny company back then. But a couple of things that you got to be careful with, especially your caller was asking about backing the thing up. You have to let any machine that QuickBooks is on digest the data. You can't just go ahead and turn it off, and God forbid you let like Windows shut it down because it's not doing the proper housekeeping. And like services like Carbonite and things like that, you actually got to be double sure that you tell Carbonite to back up the files because it doesn't necessarily look for those. Carbonite is very Windows-centric and Apple-centric where it's looking for your documents and things like that. And if you don't tell it where your backup files are stored, it may overlook them. And you're going to be real disappointed when, you know, you go to go back up after a crash and it's not there.
Yeah.
So, you know, you got to be careful. And I save all my, in the backup routine, the preferences, you can tell it to save it to Google Drive, mm-hmm. your backup, because there's QBW and QBB, two entirely different files that you need to back up.
Right.
And those can be sizable.
Right. And it's also best to quit Quicken and QuickBooks before you do the backup so that it can back up the file. It's one of the sort of the side effects is that most backup programs can't back up an open file. And so, if you're always using QuickBooks and you run your backup program, it may not have backed it up because the file was open.
And if it's a sizable file, it can take as much as 5-10 minutes for like any one of these. Carbonite will actually queue you. I mean, you may not be backing up for 20-25 minutes in the Carbonite queue.
Yeah.
Google is almost instantaneous. It's your best option, and you get ludicrous amount of data for like $1 a month.
Yeah.
Well, and that's one thing. You know, people are saying, "Well, I don't really want to pay for storage." It's ludicrously cheap, as you say, and it's secure. It's up there. They're backing it up themselves. They are very, 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 very careful not to lose people's data.
Yeah, and I've got an overall feeling too that they're very secure as well. A lot of these companies, they're certainly not lax in security, but you know, the big commercial programs, they're out there. You know, there's people working on cracking them every minute of every day.
Yep, yep.
You know, and Google is probably very diligent. I just have a feeling about that company.
I know some of the people who do.
Fact, but you can tell.
I know some of the people who do security for Google.
Mm-hmm.
They're A, amazing, and B, constant. They are constantly working.
And I would imagine that they probably have the best in the business, too.
You
just can tell.
Yeah, no question.
You know, for sure. Do we got a couple more minutes, or are we running out of time here?
We got a minute? Yeah, go.
Actually, I wanted to talk about the... I had actually written something on the Soundbites website on the front about the billing structure for Windows 10 and Windows 11. I would like to talk about that, but if we're out of time, then...
Yeah, go for it. At least we can get started.
Okay, well, you had commented you'd like the idea. I thought that they were going to take the Time Warner... Comcast model and offer tiered tiered licenses for 10 and 11 and 12. I'm thinking that you're going to have your first license will probably have a lot of commercials and probably be more like a Chromebook type of access to Windows. And then you'll have like your home license, which will probably include 360. But I think in the background, they're also going to be running ads on your screen, pop-ups.
Yep.
I think they're probably going to be doing that to annoy you. And I'm not going to adopt the new Windows, or at least I'm going to resist it until I can find, alternatives to, like we were talking and things like that. But I do believe there'll be also a pro license, too, and there probably will be multiple licenses available, too, for various equipment in your house. It won't be like per household for like 5 machines, 6 machines. Whatever,
yeah, they'll probably keep the same sort of licensing there is now with the home version and the pro version, and maybe Microsoft Office, $100 a year gives you 5 computers, 5 phones, and 5 tablets. I can see them doing the same thing with Windows. So
I'm also thinking too. I think the very low end Windows access might very well be free or almost free, but you're going to have to suffer through pop ups in the corner, and you're going to.
And that's just for the first year.
Yeah,
I don't disagree. Yeah. Now, let us put the disclaimer in there that none of us actually knows.
Right. I know, which is ridiculous. Right. That is just ridiculous. And I think they could probably at least soften the blow so people wouldn't be so resistant. Just tell us what you're doing. I mean, you know, I, again, I'm going to resist it. But I have a feeling that that's going to become the new normal, and I'll probably end up having to go back to it. It's certainly for business.
Right, right.
Yeah. But no, like I said last week, Brian, you know, I told folks, hear me now, remember me later. But I can foresee, you know, right now they're offering the Windows 10 for free. Come next year, around, say, spring, early spring, you're all of a sudden going to get a notice saying, okay, your leasing fee for Windows 10 is now this much. Either you pay it up or you've got X amount of days and it's going to be shut down.
Yep. Maybe they'll be nice and say it's free for another year.
the OEMs are probably going to be offering, like, you know, 2 years free of Windows. You know, but, you buy a new computer, you know, they're going to have to be working in the background to get some sort of structured deal for that, too. So it's going to be, again, interesting. I'm not thrilled about it. If it was communication, I might be a little bit less resistant, but the whole cloak and dagger thing is not working for me in the least.
So, no, well, and this is the whole thing. You know, you said about the new normal, and that's what they're hoping for. There will be a time of initial resistance and hatred, et cetera, but eventually, you know, first, you know, they hate you, and then they laugh at you, and then you win.
As us old folks die off, and the new kids.
The smartest thing any human being ever
really
said to me.
Like, just for example, I don't know anybody who really likes Walmart, but the place is packed.
Friend of mine once said, we were contemplating, I was manager of technical services for Saunders College, we were contemplating a huge change in our labs, and I said, this is really going to anger every student. And somebody looked at me, and she said, well, that's only a problem for 4 years.
Right, for sure. Well, the students will get freebies, or at least, you know, I mean, they're already doing that with any version of software that you can imagine. So,
right. I don't know what it is now, but
Alternative 2 is a great website you were talking about, and actually, I knew about that. One of the reasons I'm a member is because of the information that you get.
That's what I like to hear.
And support the show, because, I mean, it just keeps you on the edge of stuff, and it's great.
That's what we like to hear. Thanks.
I appreciate the service.
Thank you.
But the thing is the you know, the Linux does. There is a lot of stuff out there that you can really do just fine with, as you would know, of course. And I wouldn't even have a clue about that unless I was listening to you guys. But I'm going to give that a shot. I have a Windows test machine right now.
Go for it. Let us know what happens.
But that's the only one that has 10. So.
Yeah, let us know what happens. Thanks. Got to go. We are done with our first hour, but you know, we've got a whole another hour.
Blurred.
And the what?
The lines are not blurred.
The lines are not blurred. We're going to take a slightly longer break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. 59 minutes after the hour. Sound bites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More sound bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece, Rochester.
A public service of the Greece Central School District.
Jazz 90.1.
Streaming online at jazz901.org.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back to Soundbites. I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And Nick had to step out just for a moment, but he will be back momentarily. But going back to that previous caller and the Chromebooks and that, I can really see, you know, down the road, Chromebooks catching on.
Yeah.
Just as an alternative. I mean, Unix and Linux and all that, that was learning a whole nother operating system. Whereas the Chromebook is a little more intuitive.
It's a web page.
Yeah.
And we're used to that now.
And you can just quick open it up and, you know, do everything you want. And by that, I mean, right now, through the Chromebook and using Google, if most of you folks, well, most folks do use Google to search for everything. I mean, if you're in doubt of where to find something, you Google it. And I mean, it's just the norm.
And you may even be using the Google browser.
Yeah.
But everyone uses Google search.
But yeah, and the Chrome, or you know, should. Is another great browser that, you know, again, isn't susceptible to as many infections or anything else like Internet Explorer. Yeah.
You still get the fake messages saying you're infected.
Yeah,
don't
yeah.
Believe. In fact,
Well, don't believe any message that pops up on your screen. Don't call any phone number that pops up on your screen.
I had a customer come in, and again, they said, well, Microsoft called me back and said my machine is infected, and they wanted $325. And I said, tell you what, let me get back to you. I got to check a few things. And he called me. I says, one, Microsoft.
That wasn't Microsoft.
Never has, never will call you back to let you know your machine is infected. They could care less.
Right.
So, yeah, he brought it in, and again, he had that rootkit in there, and I had to clean all that stuff out and got him back up and got him running.
Yep. And I got a call this week from Microsoft Tech Support saying there was a problem with my computer. I said, oh, great, we've got 20 of them on the network. Yeah, which one is it? We sell computers, too. Can would you like to buy one from us? And he hung up.
I do not. Please, people, pay attention to this. I do not do tech support on Facebook. I just don't do it. I want one place I don't answer computer questions. But I will answer when somebody says, I just got a call from Microsoft. No, no, no. Yeah. Don't answer. Don't do it. No.
Mm-mm. It never has, never will happen.
Yeah. We're official Microsoft partners because we've got that badge on our website.
Yeah, right, right, exactly.
Yeah, and I could add that to my webpage, too.
And that's
right.
I'm wondering how many are just regular, you know, phone help support people that, you know, real tech companies can hire that are just fed the script. They don't know they're scamming people. They don't know they're stealing money.
Right, right.
Because the bad guy isn't going to do it himself. He's going to hire someone else to do it.
Right. Well, and yes, and they're reading a script, and I do understand that they're reading a script. But it is what it is. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Ed from Ithaca, New York. Welcome, Ed. What's up?
Hi. I have a question on my Windows 7 computer. I want to get rid of FreeCell, the game that comes on there. Is there a way of doing that?
You want to get rid of it?
Yeah.
I don't think you can. In Windows 7, well, I'm sure it's just a file that you can't. Yeah, you can uninstall the games.
It probably is not listed in Add Remove Programs.
No, it's not.
So you'd have to find the .exe file and delete it yourself.
Right. Okay. I know how to do it from XP. You can, of course, just delete the shortcuts, but I don't know that you can actually remove the program itself. Easily.
Yeah, it's one of those built-in programs. You're not supposed to want to delete it.
Right. I don't know that you can permanently delete it. Deleting it strikes Windows as a problem, and it will fix it.
Oh.
Missing system file. Yeah. So it might reinstall it during the next update. But yeah, you could manually delete the .exe file. You could manually delete the shortcuts from your start menu, but then Windows might bring it back again.
I'm not entirely certain what to say about that. There's supposed to be a. Oh dear, let me see. I'm sorry, I don't. You've stumped us. Most of the people I see, I don't know. Well, it's not a game I've ever played. I've never even paid attention to it.
In XP, it was part of the add remove. It was under Windows. Oh, it's not a program. It's a Windows component.
Oh, okay.
So
yes.
It may not be an add remove programs. It may be on the install uninstall Windows components.
How do I get to that?
That should also be in the control panel. It may be another tab on Add or Remove Programs.
Oh.
At least it was an XP. Which
yeah.
Is... FreeCell Hearts, Minesweeper, Pinball Solitaire, and Spider Solitaire came bundled by default.
Yep.
And we always joke, Macintosh comes with chess. It's a different class of computer.
Oh. Yeah.
Right.
You used to be able to uninstall... See, I don't have a 7 machine in front of me. You used to be able to uninstall all the games.
That would be fine.
Again, that was an add remove program and was under Microsoft games.
Windows features It's called in Windows 7. Actually, they called it Windows Components. And in and there is a an option that games is one of the Windows features you can uninstall.
Yeah, so you can't uninstall FreeCell, but you're going to uninstall all the games.
That would be fine. Yeah.
So, yeah, that looks like...
Control panel.
Yeah, so it's under Programs and Features, and then under Turn Windows Features On or Off. Okay. And you can pick some of them or all of them in Windows 7. They don't take up very much space, so it may not be that big a deal.
That's not the issue. It's just I don't want to get distracted by them.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I get it. It's you want to uninstall it, it's your business. That's yep. We don't care.
We hear about companies will run filters and monitors on their computers to see who's working and who's not. And my wife knew someone that got caught playing solitaire too often. So they renamed the solitaire XE to Word XE.
Nice.
Yeah, well, I tried renaming it, and I couldn't do that either. I just did that from the start button.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's definitely a control panel programs and features, uninstall, turn Windows features on or off, and uncheck games.
I'll try to figure that out.
Then yes and okay. And
we posted a link for it, too.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks so much for all your help.
Yep, sure. Good luck.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye. I got caught by a Boggle-like game. You get a bunch of...
Mm-hmm.
Well, there's that. There's a Boggle-like game where it shows you the tiles.
No trademark infringement.
No trademark infringement intended, right? but I also one where you just get a set of letters and you make as many words as possible in 3 minutes out of them. And I want to talk about getting your heart rate up, which is probably not a good idea for me at this point.
I found a game from a podcast I listened to called Auralux, and it's a strategy game where you're defending your star system against other planets, and so your star generates men and you go out and you capture other stars, and the other guys are doing the same thing, and so what's a little annoying is it's always 2-1 or 3-1, and so you got to hope the two computers fight each other. Before
these other people on the net?
No, they're both AIs now. So they haven't put a multi-user version on. So I'm showing a picture here. So this star sent off a whole bunch of its men and is going to capture that next planet.
Oh, very interesting.
And there's different patterns of goals and different things to do.
Interesting. Is it free?
It's pretty neat. Yes, free. And you can buy additional levels if you want, but it comes with a bunch of free ones.
Cool.
So it's a strategy game. It's relatively slow. So it's not a first person shooter. So it's more just strategy.
Strategy.
I'll post a link here. Auralux, Auralux.
Yeah. All right. Back to the phones. Our next caller is Joel from Pittsford, New York. Hiya, Joel. What's up?
Hello, gentlemen. I have some clarity for you on the Windows 10 update situation.
Yay.
I've got a quote here from Windows boss Terry Myerson, and he was announcing the Windows as a service plan. And what he said was, this is more than a one-time upgrade. Once a Windows device is upgraded to Windows 10, we will continue to keep it current for the supported lifetime of the device at no additional charge. Okay?
Oh, interesting.
Supported lifetime is 10 years, 5 years of basic service and 5 of extended. So Microsoft has, in fact, committed in writing that they are not going to charge people who currently upgrade to Windows 10 in the future. Now, what they may do, what they have said they will do, is that it is a free upgrade for 1 year from July 29th of last year.
Right.
So people have until July 29th, 28th of this year to upgrade for free.
Right.
After that, if they want to upgrade, they will have to buy it. But once they buy it, they will not be charged additionally. Now, one thing that may happen is if Microsoft comes out with a future Windows version, they may sell that as a service. But that's kind of unclear at this point. And the reason I think that's unclear is if you think about people who are selling Windows computers, or is HP going to sell you a computer that will have an operating system that's good for 1 year? You know, so I think the clarity, you know, people who should, who are thinking about upgrading to Windows 10 should not be thinking that they're going to have it for a year and then Microsoft's going to charge. Microsoft's Windows boss has said that's not going to be the case.
Good to know. Thank you. That does, you're right, though. That does not mean that the next version won't be a subscription service. But this particular version, and they've actually said that before, that this is the last numbered version. 10 is the last numbered version. From now on, it'll just be called Windows.
Right.
And I suspect it will be a subscription service so that you pay every year and you're upgraded to the latest thing.
Yeah, but not Windows 10.
Right. It will just be called Windows. So, yes, Windows 10 will be free forever, but Windows 10... And I suspect they'll do the same thing to 10 that they're doing to 7 and 8, which is nag, 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 and then eventually just upgrade you and the hell with you.
Well, what do you think about the what do you think the computer sellers are going to think about selling computers where the operating system may only be usable for a year?
Well, they already do that now with antivirus. You get a 30, 60, 90-day antivirus trial.
Yes, they do that with antivirus, but antivirus you have options.
Yeah.
Microsoft Office, you have options. You can buy Microsoft Office or you can rent it.
Yep.
But you can't, you don't have the option of having your operating system.
True, do you can run
computer
Linux.
Your computer has to have an operating system.
Well, yeah, if you get Windows, then is it going to stop working?
Here's the thing, and I'm, you know, putting my hat on as if I were a vendor of hardware. I don't care how long the operating system lasts. I'm selling you a piece of hardware. I only get one sale out of that. If the thing dies at the end of a year, maybe you'll come in and buy another computer for all I care.
Or maybe you'll buy your license from HP again.
Or maybe HP will sell Windows licenses.
Yeah.
So they don't actually care. They're not. They know that 99% of all people are short-sighted. Half of them aren't going to know that there's a one-year license on the thing. And they're not going to care. They're just going to buy the operating system. And as we said earlier, it's the new norm. You know, this is it's going to be in the future. My operating system has to be upgraded in a year, and I have to pay for that. Okay. Apple people did that for decades.
Yep.
Apple people had options.
What option?
They could upgrade or not.
No, at some point, you either upgrade or...
This stuff, well, you can't buy anything new because your computer's too old.
Right.
Correct.
Right.
Yeah, and that's just the same thing with Windows.
Yeah, but the old OSs haven't stopped working, and Apple nags you to get the new OS, but at least, you know, a few years ago, Apple went to free OS upgrades.
Right.
If you stop paying the Windows license and your computer stops working, that's a horribly different problem.
Right.
Well, I think it'll be a hard sell for computer vendors to say, okay, we're going to sell you a computer that's only going to run for a year, and then you're going to have to pay some more money.
Yeah.
Yeah, but again, I don't know that it matters, because that's going to be true whether you have a new computer, an old computer, an in-between computer. At some point, Microsoft is intent on everybody going to the subscription model.
Yeah.
So they say it'll be free forever. That's true.
Free. Yep.
But they'll want to upgrade you. All right, we got to take a break.
Time will tell. But,
yep.
But at least for Windows 10, we've got the situation clarified.
Yep, exactly. Thanks. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes. Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Nick Francesco, you. 19 minutes after the hour, Soundbites member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And we have no one on the line?
No jump in the music anymore, too.
No jump in the music anymore, too. Exactly right. Apple believes it has fixed the problem that caused its Safari web browser to crash when users carried out a search via its address bar. The problem appeared to have begun early on Wednesday. Users had complained that they had experienced the bug on both the firm's mobile devices and on its Mac computers. Apple, well, wherever you run Safari. Hello. Apple recently updated its iOS and OS 10 operating systems, but users who had not installed the new version had also reported the fault. This would suggest that the immediate cause was a process happening at Apple's data centers. However, some experts have suggested that an additional flaw in Safari itself may have led to the program crashing as it was unable to handle the invalid input. Apple has not provided a comment about the fault. Earlier in the week, it emerged that a web link had gone viral that forced Safari to crash. The page the browser was sent to, here's a surprise, used JavaScript to put the software into a loop, forcing it to fail. However, the more recent problem appears to have been much more widespread. Apple revealed on Tuesday that there are about 1 billion of its core devices in use. The vast majority of those may have been infected, although that number also includes set-top TV boxes and smartwatches, which do not use the browser. So with Safari crashing on you, give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll-free 1-800-790-0400. One five.
And you can turn off those suggestions and preload first search hit in the Safari preferences. So some people, I like it. As soon as I start typing a search, it's already doing the search, and it probably will find what I want before I finish typing.
Yep.
But that means it's sending data to the internet.
Well, and
it has to do that.
Right, and we talked about that. All of them do.
Yep.
They all do bring you whatever information you want, and that's the beauty. But they bring you that information by using the internet to, because no machine is powerful enough to do what the hardware up on the cloud can do. So when, for example, and they all do it. So if I'm on Siri and I say, blah, blah, Siri, do this for me, or I'm on Google and say, blah, blah, Google, do this for me, or I'm on Cortana and I say, blah, blah, Cortana, do this for me. What it actually does is sends the audio file to the web, to the internet, to the servers at Google or Apple or Microsoft, and they parse out the audio and figure out what to do and send the result back. So, yes, you are definitely showing the internet what it is you do on a daily basis. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Joan from Brockport, New York. Hiya, Joan. What's up?
Hello. I've lost a bunch of pictures off my hard drive.
Oh, dear. What happened?
We uploaded to the cloud, and it's showing that the files are there, the folders, but no pictures.
On your computer or on the cloud?
On the Google Drive.
Did you look at Google? Did you do this through Google Drive or through Google Photo?
Google Drive.
Okay, so you created a folder, uploaded a bunch of stuff, and
now they don't show?
Correct.
Okay,
they're not on the hard drive either.
Yeah. They
Google Drive is just a folder on your hard drive, and then it also copies it to the internet.
Yeah. So no, it should not have removed itself from there. But on the other hand, if you go to drive.google.com and you see a list of your folders, and on the left you see new and a big red button and my drive and shared with me and all that other stuff. Yeah?
Okay, yes.
Underneath there it should say how much of your space you've used.
You should be able to see your photos and the folder.
One step at a time. It should say how much of your space you've used, like 4 gig of 15 gig used. And just below that, it should say upgrade storage.
Okay.
So how much of your space have you used?
I can't. About 1 gig. We're driving right now. I'm not in front of the computer.
Okay.
All right. The other thing you can do is actually one of those choices on the side is Google Photos. Have you looked in there to see if your pictures are there?
No.
Okay, you should, because Google Photos now is really where Google wants to store pictures.
It'll be under Google Photos.
Right. Again, on the left, you'll see that red new button and my drive and shared with me. Underneath that is Google Photos. And if you click on that, theoretically, you will see a list of all the photos that are saved on your...
I'm trying to mimic that. So if you put a folder of photos on your Google Drive, it automatically pulls them into Google Photos.
Right.
No.
No?
No.
Oh.
I have several folders of photos on my Google Drive, and they're just showing as folders. Google Photos is a separate area.
All right, so you've moved all of your pictures up to Google Drive, but they're not showing up in Google Drive.
But they,
right,
but
I'm going to have Mike talk to you because now he's pulled over.
Yeah, it does show up.
It. Here you go.
Yeah, it does show up as a folder on my Google Drive with all the pictures in it, but not as Google Photos. So Google Photos are uploaded separately from Google Drive.
Yeah.
So when you click on the folder, you see nothing, even if you wait a while because...
Yeah, it takes a long time, and I figured I'd let it try to load, and it loaded for a whole day, and nothing came up.
Yeah, a whole day should do it for you.
That's what I thought, too. And it's probably about 17, 18 different folders, and I uploaded them last year in 2014. And I hadn't checked them in a long time, and when I checked them like a month ago, the folders were still there, but the actual files, the pictures were gone.
Are you logged into the same Google account that you originally uploaded them with?
I am. Like I said, the folders are still there. Everything that I created is still there, except for the actual pictures.
I have seen this behavior when you run out of disk space on Google Drive. The pictures are still there. You can't access them until you either make some space or pay for additional space.
Oh, okay.
but if you haven't used all your space, then I'm not entirely certain what to tell you.
Yeah, it came out to about 1 gigabyte. I don't know if that was, more than was allowed. I don't remember.
No, 15 gig is the minimum. It's what, but if you uploaded all your pictures, how many did you have?
It was 1,000 maybe. I'm not even sure how many actual pictures it was.
But even if you uploaded them, they still should be on your computer where they started.
Yeah, well, I had uploaded them from an external drive, and then I had to reformat that drive.
Okay, there's the problem. Possibly. When Google Drive is not a backup, it's a synchronize. So when you uploaded the photos, they copied up. When you erased the external drive, they erased because it synchronizes your Google Drive.
You can break that sync.
Right, but it synchronizes by default.
Right.
So you should have put them in Google Photos because that does make a separate copy.
Okay.
With Google Drive, it's one copy on your computer, and if you change your computer, it changes Google Drive also.
All right. So there's no way of getting them back, huh?
Go to the backup hard drive that you should have.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I don't know of a way to do that.
Yeah, I just thought maybe they were still there because the folders were still there.
Right. Well, yeah. No, if you theoretically not. Well, I would check to make sure you haven't used your 15 gig.
Yeah.
When you get home, if you have, it's $2 a month for 100 gig. Pay for a couple of months. All your stuff should come right back. You should see it again.
Oh, okay.
That would be great.
All right, that's a possibility.
But I don't know quite what you did when you did the backup, and I can't see your computer, and of course you're not there in front of it either. So, but if you filled your 15 gig, that behavior would make sense to me.
Okay.
Well, that's a help, better than what we had.
There you go. Yep. Good luck.
Thank you.
Yep. Bye bye.
Yeah, that's something to keep in mind, that all the cloud drives, Google Drive and iCloud Drive, Dropbox, they are synchronizing. Some of the programs do have a revision history, so you can go back to a previous version of a document. But it synchronizes. You put a file in your Google Drive, it synchronizes it up to Google. You delete the file from your Google Drive, it deletes it from Google.
Right. Photos works differently.
Right. But
can.
You have to put photos into Google Photos.
Right.
Not Google Drive.
Right. Right. You can break the sync, but you have to actually break the sync.
Yep.
It's a the cloud is weird, and there's no easy way to deal with it.
Yeah.
All right.
And people get caught by that synchronized versus backup quite frequently.
Right, 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 right. And it's actually nice if you what you want to do is synchronize.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, if I remove a file from Google Drive, I probably want it off my phone too.
Right. So the files you put on Google Drive, you can see on all your different computers, on your tablets, on your phones, because it synchronizes through the cloud to all your other devices.
Right. So you back them all up. You go look at them. You see, oh, this one's blurry. Right. Blah blah blah.
You delete it from one. Yeah, delete from one. It deletes it from all.
Right. All right. Back to the phones. Our next caller is Patrick from Batavia, New York. Welcome, Patrick. What's up?
Well, Nick, I just want you to know that you've really kind of had an influence on me. I'm hearing all this talk about backups and that, and I'm thinking about doing that.
So. Wow. Good for you, Patrick.
Yeah, because I always thought, what I got is probably not all that important. It's just a lot of fluff. But anyway, let me explain a little bit how I how I save my files. And then maybe you can help me think through this options that are the best. I've never understood why people use a documents folder. Because I save things according to, let's say, like I have a camera hobby, and maybe I do things for computers. And, I have my files, I create folders according to the type of file.
Mm-hmm.
So, according to the interest. So I wouldn't put a spreadsheet in two different files. I'd put a spreadsheet, let's say I did bird watching, and I did spreadsheets and documents. Anyway, so the point here is that from what I'm understanding to say, the backup works easy if you use documents and you use what I guess Microsoft wanted you to use.
Well, and you can make all of your own folders in the documents folder.
Right, but I haven't done that. And
if they're scattered around your hard drive, they're harder to find later.
That freedom thing. I just don't like that. So that's what I'm fighting. But anyway, my thought was that if you had a program like a Ghost where you got an image, that it actually would copy all of my stuff. Is that right?
Yes, it would. The problem with Ghost is that it copies everything.
It copies more than you want.
If you all of a sudden introduce crap into your system, then crap will get copied over, and you have a problem.
And it also copies your applications. It tries to copy your system files, so it may copy more than you want and end up using more disk space than backing up just your documents.
But it would get everything there.
Yes.
But with a trade-off of what you just said. So it is a good thing, but there is a downside to it.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And if I were to do something like that, do you replace the old, or can you do separate versions? So, you're going to use a lot more space, but could you do a version like once a month? It would be a full...
That depends on the program you use.
Let's say Ghost.
Ghost.
Well, Ghost doesn't exist anymore. They've discontinued it.
Clonezilla,
for example. Yeah.
Yeah, Clonezilla. Some of them will do an incremental clone, so it just copies the files that need to be copied that changed. And some of them have to do an entire copy again.
So if you did an entire, it didn't wipe out the old one. It's just an additional one.
No, that's a separate option yet.
Oh, okay. But that is a possibility. But
okay, hold on.
That way you're using a lot more disk space.
Yeah, hold on. According to the Clonezilla website, they are not yet doing incremental backups.
So every time you run it, it erases the destination and recopies everything.
Right. And that makes sense. It's a cloner. It's not meant to be a standard backup program.
Oh, okay.
For that, you would use Cobian or one of those programs, which allows you to do. But that doesn't back up everything. So
you tell it what folder you want backed up. So that's where my documents came from in the beginning. People didn't know where they were saving it, so Microsoft added that to, was it XP?
Yeah.
So that when, if you didn't
tell it, 95.
So if you didn't tell it otherwise, it went into documents.
Right.
So then you could back up the documents folder, and that was all your stuff.
Yeah. Okay.
So one of the things you can do, for example, but again, now this is manual backup, which is very, very dangerous. You can set up, for example, CloneZilla to do a full backup once a month and an incremental backup for every other day. And then once a month, you can make a full CloneZilla backup of everything so that you have all of it in one place.
Oh, okay, I hear your music. Can I get a yes or no question?
Can you hold on? Stay on the line. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes. Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, Patrick from Batavia, and you, 40 minutes after the hour. Soundbites, member supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest running computer show. Back to more soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And 45 minutes after the hour, we still have Patrick from Batavia on the line. Go for it, Patrick.
Okay, you've been talking a lot about Chromebook. And when I started looking at the models, I noticed the majority are 2 gig. There are some 4 gig memory.
Mm-hmm.
Would you say there's a big advantage to go to the 4 gig?
No.
No. I did get one that's got 4 gig. I wound up going for the bigger screen. That's more important to me. And I wound up going with the Acer, and that has 4 gig with 100 gig internal hard drive.
I would also say
my attention when you mentioned that you had the 4 gig, because I was thinking 2 gig, and then I thought, well, maybe I should just ask.
If you're going to do intensive stuff, if you're thinking of doing video editing, then go for the 4 gig.
No, that all happens online too. Everything happens online.
Render it.
I have a 2 gig machine here in front of me. I regularly have half a dozen tabs open. I've had as many as 15. I haven't had any issues at all in terms of I'm full or any of that nonsense because it's just tabs on a browser. Everything's really happening up on the web.
Yeah.
So if I'm writing a document, I'm not really using any more of my local RAM than if I were running a news web page, anything.
Yeah, that wasn't so much as important to me as the screen size.
It was the screen size.
Mine was driven strictly by screen size, and oh, by the way, it just happened to have 4 gig of memory in it.
Okay. That's what I was looking for. General, thank you very much. As always, a great lot of important information.
Thank you. We'd love to hear that. Thanks.
Okay.
One of the other major differences you'll see is whether they have touchscreen or not. Windows 8 was really designed for a touchscreen. That was one of the things that people hated about it, is it didn't work well on a desktop with a mouse. It really, really wanted a touchscreen. They've fixed that in Windows 10. So you can get a Chromebook Pixel for $2,000, or you can get a cheaper one for $200.
Right.
Depending on what you want in it.
Right. And I generally tell people, you know, you don't really need more than two, maybe $300 for a Chromebook. So whatever you want to spend on that, the some of them are under $200 and they're all
The 11-inch models are in that $200 range.
Mine with the 15-inch screen was $275.
Yep.
And that came with the 4 gig of memory and the 100 gig hard drive.
For the 100 gig hard drive, the 100 gigs online.
Right.
Yep. Yeah. And that's just for a year or two.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I've finally lost that on mine. I'm so bad. I've only got 17 gig. All right. Back to the phones. We move from Batavia to Bergen. Welcome, Dave. What's up?
Hey, guys. I wish I called sooner, but I have a question about virtual private networks.
Yep.
My wife was just doing our taxes, like a TurboTax online, and that always makes me nervous. And I started thinking about it again. And I'm using Linux Mint, and it looks pretty easy. I mean, the software is already installed in the network manager to set one up. what I was wondering is what's your opinion? Is it a good idea? And also, the second part of the question, I just heard Netflix is now blocking people who are using VPNs.
Yeah, they are indeed doing that, yes.
I wonder if you're in the United States, or it depends on where it looks like.
All over the world. The basic idea is, for example, as of the February 1st, which is what, Monday? Sunday? No, Monday. Doctor Who is no longer available in the United States.
Yes.
But it's available in England.
Yes.
So if I could find, if I could create a VPN to a proxy, blah, 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 I could watch Doctor Who. They don't want you doing that. And that's not because they hate you or whatever, but they pay royalties based on who's watching in what country.
Right.
So it's not that they hate you. They just haven't negotiated the royalties. And so they don't want to be sued for what would list to millions upon millions of dollars.
Yeah. And the other half of a VPN is a VPN server at the other end. So your computer has the VPN client in it. You generally would then need to subscribe to a VPN service.
Right, right.
At the other end.
I mean, now, I've seen there's some free ones and there's some paid ones that are relatively cheap.
Yeah. Generally speaking, when you're in, say, public Wi-Fi hotspots, we recommend don't do anything involving banking or money because it's possible someone could sniff your data.
Right.
So that would be a perfect place to use a VPN. When you're at home, you're already behind your router, which gives you a hardware firewall.
Yeah.
And when you go to a banking website, TurboTax to do your taxes, you want to make sure that most browsers give a little padlock icon, or you'll get a green link. So that means the data is encrypted on your computer before it goes out over the internet.
Right.
And you're likely safe that way.
Google, in fact, with Chrome, is now going to be putting a red X over any website on the padlock. Yeah. There, it's not just going to be open. There's going to be a red X if it's not HTTPS.
Oh, that's cool.
If you're a Linux user and you're really looking for something that's really super secure, there's a version of Linux called Tails.
Oh yeah, I've heard of that.
That's what Edward Snowden uses.
Yep, exactly. And that automatically routes through Tor.
Right.
Or TAN, I guess, the Tor Anonymity Network.
I do have the Tor browser installed, which I use sometimes.
Yep. And that's secure. For those of you who don't know, Tor is the onion router. That's called the onion router because it's layer upon layer upon layer of security. And as you peel away the layers, like an onion, blah, blah, blah. But yeah, so there's lots and lots of other secure Linux distributions as well. UPR, the Ubuntu Privacy Remix, for example, is one. And iPredia OS is another, and Hunix is another, and so there's a bunch of them that are out there. LPS, the lightweight portable security.
Well, VPN would sort of be overkill for. I mean, I just like the idea of not having people tracking everything I'm looking at and where I'm going, that kind of thing, just for security.
Well, they can still do that because you're going to a website.
Right, and here's the problem. I don't care where or who or what. Unless you're going through an onion router, through the Tor, then at some point your router says, your website says, oh, and by the way, my address is blah, 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 so that responses can actually get back to you.
What the VPN does give you is security on the path to the other end. So no one in the middle can sniff what you're doing. But the other end is going to know what you're doing.
Right.
Oh, well, okay, because it's confusing to me. I've been trying to figure this out, but you can look, it can make, give you a different ISP that looks like it's from another part of the country or another country.
Right, a different endpoint. So you connect to a VPN server in England, and every website you go to thinks you're in England.
Right.
So then you can watch BBC America, BBC. And you can watch Netflix England, and the content providers are trying to stop that because you are technically violating their terms of service. You are watching the content in a country that you're not licensed to do so with.
Right. Well, I wouldn't even care about doing that. I mean, what we have for Netflix is fine with me, although I do miss Doctor Who. I will.
But, yeah, right, you will.
Yeah, but So it's really probably not necessary thing for me to do for security reasons.
It isn't as it depends on what your security goals are.
Yeah.
If your security goals are that absolutely nobody knows anything about you ever, then something like Tails.
Yeah.
If you want to make sure you're not being sniffed, then just make sure you have an HTTPS connection.
Okay. Okay. So it sounds like I should just keep what I'm doing now, I guess.
Well, generally speaking, you should be fine.
Yeah. Okay.
I mean, nothing is 100%, but you're well into the 90s.
Yeah. Well, even now, when I go to the VPN server, you know, websites, they show my IP address, which is not actually my IP address.
Mm-hmm.
It's really like Frontier's IP. It's in Rochester, and
that's the IP that they have assigned you.
Yeah, but the one that appears in my network manager that I've had for years, static IP address, is very different from the one.
That's your local IP address on your local computer.
Yeah, okay, okay.
You're right, the 192.168 number is local to your personal network. The other address is actually out to the internet.
Well, the other one looks like I'm in Rochester, but I'm really not.
Yeah. Okay. All right, listen, I'm afraid we're done.
All right, thanks, guys.
Sorry. Gotta go. Well, you wasted 2 hours of your life with this nonsense. But you'll have a chance to do it again in about 166 hours. We're out for the week. We'll be back next week with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 55 minutes after the hour. Don't go away. George is coming in to play the best German music you'll hear all week. It's Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.